A new chapter at Barnes & Noble has begun. Have you noticed any changes? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. We'll hear from the bookseller's new British chief executive shortly, but first, Imperial Brands, one of the world's biggest tobacco companies, said 2019 has been a, quote, challenging year. It warned of low sales and earnings growth in 2020 as regulators cracked down amid growing concerns about the health risks of e-cigarettes and other vaping products. Emma Wall is head of investment analysis at Hargreaves Lansdowne. She explains how the industry is adapting.
The difficult question is to ask is this a fundamental structural headwind which will derail the entire sector, or is this just another bump in the road which the tobacco sector will continue over and continue on to success? Because there have been many bumps in the road for the tobacco sector. If you think about the smoking ban, you know, that was going to be apparently the big thing that derailed tobacco stocks. And yes, their share prices were hit, but tobacco stocks continue to pay dividends and their share prices continue to rise.
Do you think tobacco companies at this point should be making more investment in e-cigarettes, maybe to make them safer or comply with regulatory concerns, or should they just be looking to new products altogether?
The way that tobacco survives is through innovation and diversification. I lived in Asia until recently, and smoking traditional cigarettes is very much still alive and kicking in Asia. And so that sort of geographical diversification has helped the tobacco industry to continue to make revenues and profits. You have to have not just geographical diversification, but also product diversification. There are a number of other products that we should expect to see investment in from the tobacco industry, things like the heated tobacco space and e-cigarettes.
Emma Wall, head of investment analysis at Hargreaves Lansdowne. Thank you.
Thank you.
Shares of Imperial Brands are now mostly flat, having rebounded from early losses. Let's run through some other numbers. Hong Kong's Hang Seng ended the session higher. That's despite the sharpest decline in business activity last month in more than two decades amid ongoing protests. And OPEC says it'll cut supply by 2.2 million barrels a day over the next 4 years as production from shale and non-OPEC producers increases. To Chile now, the country's president has told the BBC he won't resign over mass protests in which at least 20 people have died. It's Sebastian Piñera's first interview since the backlash over living standards began 3 weeks ago. The BBC's Katie Watson reports from Santiago.
The protests started after the government increased the price of metro tickets. Subway stations were burnt, supermarkets were looted, and then Sebastian Piñera imposed a state of emergency, deploying troops to bring the situation under control. Chile is one of the richest countries in the region, yet it is also one of the most unequal in the world, and that's what these protests are about. He refused to take all the blame, instead saying that problems had been building since the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet ended in 1990 and the country returned to democracy.
What is important now? How, as a society, we react to what people are asking, what people are demanding? Because I sympathize with those demands. Of course, I would like to solve all the problems in 1 second. I cannot do that.
Mr. Piñera has increased wages, pensions, and promised to improve public services, as well as shake up his cabinet. But protesters aren't satisfied. His administration is now facing growing criticism over the excessive use of force used by police and soldiers against protesters. The president said, if proven, there would be no exemptions from prosecution.
I'm the BBC's Katie Watson for Marketplace.
For me, there are a few things more relaxing than wandering around a bookstore looking for my next great read. Bonus points if there are nooks and crannies to quietly thumb through the pages. That's the kind of feeling Barnes & Noble's new boss, James Daunt, is trying to restore at the chain's stores. He successfully managed a similar turnaround at UK chain Waterstones in 2016. I sat down with Mr. Daunt to talk about how the revamp effort is going just a few months into the job.
The challenge is considerable. There's lots that we need to do. The shops aren't very good because they haven't had much love, let alone dollars, invested in them. So they're all a bit tatty. And there's a lot too much that isn't a book. And I think clearing all of that out and concentrating back on the book and making sure that it's displayed in the most attractive and sensible way possible for each individual shop is the task that we're engaged in at the moment.
So part of the strategy is allowing bookstores to look a little bit different from each other. But during your turnaround at Waterstones here, you worked with publishers to create books that people really wanted to buy. So beautiful covers, nice paper pages. Is that part of your strategy with Barnes & Noble as well?
Yes, I mean, to be honest, I think the publishers are doing a really good job at that anyway. I think our job is to move away from this belief that you put exactly the same array of titles in every single store, irrespective if it's in New York City or Birmingham, Alabama.
What do you think the appetite is for people to buy a physical book versus an ebook? Obviously, Barnes & Noble has its own e-reader, the Nook. E-readers were once thought to pose a serious threat to the paper book industry, but so far that hasn't happened. I might be part of that problem. I bought a Kindle when they first came out. I don't think I've touched it in a few years. Do you think they have a place in the industry anymore?
They're definitely not going away. I mean, they're a really good way to read, but that's a small part of the market.
So what's the key to making them successful?
I don't think there is a particular key. I think they exist for people who, you know, don't want to carry the weight around or like the backlit way in which you can read. But the physical book itself is just a lovely object. You can remember a book you've read. You can remember its cover, whereas an electronic file is something that conveys the words and then you forget about it.
So it sounds like, at least when it comes to personal preference, maybe yours is for a physical book over an e-reader?
Mine certainly is, and I know that is the case for most people. You know, we like anyway that people consume books, but the physical book is clearly the better way for most people.
Yep, I'm in your camp. There's nothing better than the satisfaction of closing that final page and putting it on the shelf. James Daunt, Chief Executive at Barnes & Noble, thank you.
Thanks very much.
E-reader or physical book, let us know which one you prefer. And while you're at it, what's the title that's sitting on your nightstand at the moment? Tweet us with the hashtag BBC Marketplace. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.